This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Coming up in the second half of our show, a look at a new report that ranks Florida at the bottom among U.S. states for health care for children. It's nothing new for Florida to place so poorly in that arena, but this time the numbers have reached a new low, and we'll find out why. But first, Hurricane Irma wiped out power for millions of Floridians. In all, more than 6.8 million were without power, many for days and some for up to 2 weeks. The state's largest utility, Florida Power and Light, says that at the peak of outages, 4.4 million of their 5 million customers, in all accounting for about 10 million people across 35 counties, were without electricity. Customers with other utility companies experienced the same darkness, heat, and frustration that became a calling card of Irma. The effort to restore power was described as the largest power restoration program ever seen in the United States. And turning the lights back on took days, then weeks, and even today, more than 2 weeks after Irma slammed into southwest Florida, there are still some outages in counties in our area. Going without power for weeks has pushed many to look toward solar power and other renewables as an alternative to relying on local utility companies for their power. Some see it as a way to have a safeguard against blackouts should the worst come to pass, while others see it as a way to become a fully independent producer of their own power. But the cost and technology to go fully off the electrical grid and the realities of relying purely on renewables aren't trivial. Solar contractors say they're seeing demand for new solar installations, but also confusion about what's possible and what's well-suited to Florida's unique weather conditions. Dominic Zito is the co-owner of Florida Solar Design Group. He's here to talk about the realities and fantasies of going off the grid and what's possible for homes in southwest Florida for solar power. Dominic, welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
Also joining us today is solar power advocate and author Neville Williams, who can shed some light on how Florida can apply solar power to infrastructure, like water pumps, to soften the blow from disasters like Hurricane Irma. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Julie.
We are talking about going off the grid, a tempting alternative to waiting for power companies to come to the rescue after a storm. But is it realistic or even possible? Join our conversation by calling 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So Dominic Zito with the Florida Solar Design Group, what kind of response have you had since Hurricane Irma?
Well, we've had a tremendous response. Our blog and email and telephones have been lighting up, no pun intended, with electricity and the light aspect of it. But, you know, the big thing is people were tired of not having power, not having electricity. And it kind of leads right into one of the largest misconceptions in the solar industry. And it is a federally mandated type of product or item that happens is most people think, like my personal home, I have a solar system on my house. But when the grid goes down, so when FPL or LCEC here in southwest Florida are two power providers, when there is no electricity to the grid, it is mandated that the solar photovoltaic or PV system stops producing electricity. And the reason for that is so it doesn't put energy or electricity back into the grid to the power lines. So if there is a line worker working there, it's a dangerous situation. So the most important thing is everybody wants to go solar for power when the grid's down or the power's out, but it is not actually true unless you use batteries and a battery bank type of system, which has battery storage for your electricity, which your home or business would work off of.
So people may be walking into the solar arena on the assumption that if you have solar power on your house, it's your own little world there and you're not connected to anything.
That is correct, yes.
But that's not always the case.
It is not always the case.
What's the difference in price if you do the battery storage for yourself and you do completely disconnect?
Completely disconnecting, and again, a grid system or an off-grid, you'll hear off-grid a lot. An off-grid system is actually like one of our barrier islands that has no power source or electricity to it. So that is off-grid, off the electrical grid. But your home specifically, if you're tied into LCEC or FPL, you are still grid connected. So you cannot be off-grid with a home that has power from an electric company. With the battery banks and things like that, it will offset or virtually eliminate your electricity bill for a solar photovoltaic system. So it'll reduce it by a certain percentage or completely eliminate it. You'll still have monthly fees that you're paying for the service companies, or in some municipalities, there is a tax that is paid on your kilowatt hour usage, but you're still tied directly to the power company when the grid is up. When you add a battery bank to these systems, when the grid's down or at night, you can utilize your stored energy through these batteries. The next day they get replenished, or when the power is out, they'll get replenished. Just like a gas, propane, or diesel generator, when the grid goes down, that'll kick on automatically. Solar photovoltaic systems with batteries can work simultaneously with those, but only if the battery bank is there. Cost-wise, you could practically double your installation cost with a properly sized battery system or battery bank.
So, okay. And let me just break this down real quick. So Joe, normal guy who owns a house in such and such gated community, mm-hmm. he wants to get a good battery pack that's appropriate for his house, wants to get a solar installation. It costs whatever. But he cannot cut that cord with the utility company.
That is correct.
It's illegal for him to do that?
It is illegal, and I believe Neville might be able to speak
Neville,
a little bit towards that.
Yeah, Neville's worked a little bit in
– Well –
A little bit, a lot.
Well, they have you disconnected automatically when a grid goes down. They don't want line workers getting zapped by power, so that's understandable. But you could have a battery system which is for backup power, emergency power. We used to – the company I owned in Maryland, we did dozens if not hundreds of these. Now, they were more money, so we had more power outages in Maryland than we have in Florida. And people say, oh, I want a battery backup system, and they would hook their refrigerator and their lights and their computer – but not their air conditioning to this thing. And it would run it as long as you want, but you wouldn't have a full house running your freezer and all the electrical stuff. So it's a battery backup system. In fact, Tesla makes one called a Powerwall. I don't think they're selling it here, but the idea is you just put – and I've seen them here in Florida 5 years ago, and we did them 10, 15 years ago. That's not uncommon. So it's just a matter of spending the money. You can buy a propane generator backup. So it's not about anything legal or not. It's just that if you have a grid-tied system, you're connected to the grid. And when the grid goes off, you just flip a switch and then you just make your own power, but a minimum amount. To run the full house at the level the grid was supplying you would take a very large battery bank. So off-grid people usually live with minimum amount of electrical appliances.
Because I remember when we were doing stories just in the very quick aftermath of Hurricane Irma, there was they wanted to make sure people knew how to hook up their gas-powered generators correctly so that they didn't, like you say, push electricity back out to the line workers who could be out there and put themselves at risk. So there was a way to connect it,
yeah.
I guess, like after some sort of notch or something, some little plug-in along there that's
right.
Just your house, but it won't allow it to go back out.
Yes, that's correct. And it's usually with a power disconnect switch or a switch that's done electronically in the generator itself. You know, because you have differences between little pull-along generators or a large generator that's installed in an integral part of the home. So, but all that electronics is done that way. Same thing with solar photovoltaic systems. When the grid goes down, so it's not receiving that signal from your power line or from your meter, there are circuits and electronics in the system that shuts it off. So, again, it will not produce any electricity for the house, but more importantly, it will not backfeed it into the grid to potentially harm somebody that's working on the lines.
But is there something that people can have installed in their house that's kind of a solar situation that would be able to store power that
yes.
can be used for just the refrigerator kind of thing and
yeah.
not necessarily full house mm-hmm. power? That there is something that
yeah.
is usable? It's okay
absolutely.
To do that?
Absolutely. And again,
we just made them ourselves. We just, we didn't have anything fancy. Now Elon Musk is providing the Powerwall, which is a compact little battery, lithium batteries in your garage. It's for emergency power. That's all. And anybody can buy it. It's just a matter of money. And I would think people after this experience would want to do that because you can replenish the power in that thing from the solar that you've already paid for that's on your roof. While it's being disconnected from the grid, you're replenishing the battery in your basement or in your garage, and then you can run your emergency circuits.
And absolutely. And what it is what people have to realize and what's part of our education. When we're out at a client's house or answering phone calls or if you're looking at our blog and you put Tesla in or you look at battery banks and things like that, it's only as good as many batteries as you do. So a lot of people think, oh, the new Tesla Powerwall. And please don't get me wrong. I love Elon Musk. I love their products. Their automobiles are spectacular. It's a little greenwashing in our industry because in realistic numbers, an average household here in Florida with a $200 a month electricity bill, you need 4 full house batteries. So heaven forbid Hurricane Irma comes through. Well, can't go again, but hopefully they're going to retire her name.
Yeah.
But with that, you need 4 to 6 to maybe even 10 of these power walls to have your home operating as if nothing had happened.
Okay.
So with that, yeah, the Tesla Powerwalls, I think, retails about $3,800 for grand, let's say. But that's not installed. It's not charge controllers and other materials needed to tie it into everything. Now you multiply that by 5 or 6 or 7 battery systems for the Tesla Powerwall. That's where you're getting very expensive for batteries. But they can absolutely do it. And today's market, traditional solar PV battery banks are less expensive. They're not as glamorous. They don't look as pretty as the Tesla. They don't have the Tesla name on it. But there are better options out there right now for battery systems and battery banks. The most important factor is my home, my PV systems have been on my house almost 9 years now. If we install somebody's PV system next week and in 9 days from now, whenever newer, latest, greatest technology is coming out, we will be able to retrofit my 10-year-old system at that point, or a client we just installed a 2-year-old system with some parity to be able to do that. Right now, it is very expensive, but it is absolutely possible.
It's like the new iPhone.
It would be nice to have a fan in lights. That's really all you need to survive the 5 or 10 or 15 days that you're going to be out after a hurricane. If you have a fan, you can survive. If you have no fans, you don't need the air conditioning. You need the fans and the lights and maybe the refrigerator.
Yeah, a refrigerator.
And that'll run on one $5,000 battery bank.
That would run on one $5,000. So that's a safety, stopgap measure.
And what we do as part of the education when we're with clients in their homes, not only is it a matter of educating them and making them aware of the products and what we do and what we can't do, but they're also informing us and our sales staff on what their needs are. So if we're walk through a home and they say definitively, I just want this one refrigerator, there's a freezer in the garage, an outlet here in the kitchen, and an outlet in the bathroom, and an outlet in the bedroom for fans and moving fans around from there, yes.
Yeah, but if you put like 5 power strips on every outlet,
exactly,
might be
right.
And
again, but that's part of the education in what we do. And then we have other clients that I'm working with right now where we're doing the whole house system, and it's 5 or 7 batteries, and they're realizing what the expense is. But if they're aware and they understand why they're spending this money and what it's going to do for them, we're doing our job.
Mm-hmm. We are talking about going off the grid. Is it something that you've wondered about? Now's your chance to ask the experts. Give us a call at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. So, Neville Williams, you've spent a career advocating for solar energy, and you say that basic infrastructure needs, like pumping water, can be met with solar. Where else in the world have you seen things like that done?
Well, first of all, in the history of the solar business, it started in the early 70s in the Sahel in Washington, in Africa, where water pumps were driven by solar because when the sun shines, the DC pump works. It just pumps water. When the sun goes away, it doesn't pump water. So that was the beginning of the business. Huge numbers. And then our company that I'm no longer involved with, but in Maryland, I've ran a bunch of companies over the years besides writing and being an advocate. We did of late got away from residential business and into small commercial and a lot of municipal things such as school systems, public buildings and things like that, government buildings. But the main – one of the big businesses was supplying solar electric power systems for sewage and water treatment plants from Connecticut to Maryland to Delaware, Pennsylvania, 1 and 2 megawatts, because nothing that a county buys in terms of electricity costs more than running their plants, their water treatment plants. It's huge everywhere. Now, in Florida, it's worse because, as you pointed out, we're flat here and all the water has to be pumped. So we had huge sewage problems in Collier County because there's no power to run the pumps. So,
and there's no gravity to help it along. And, we all learned a lot more about our sewage systems last couple of weeks than
too.
We ever probably wanted to know.
And there's companies now, since the Amendment 1 and it was defeated, Amendment 4 was passed on taxes, the system's opened up here. Now, there's new ways to finance it in Florida. I can't talk about them. They're fairly new and proprietary, but there are ways municipalities can now, and some companies are talking to every county in Florida right now about putting in 1 and 2 megawatt systems somewhere close to at each water treatment plant. So if the grid goes down, those water pumps for the sewage and treatment systems will keep working, at least in the daytime.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious about that. What is the difference in cost to a municipality if you have a couple water pumps and you want to put solar on it instead of having the typical generator? Is there a difference
in that?
Well,
it's going to be cheaper than generators. It doesn't use fuel. And you're going to have the solar there year-round anyway, probably cutting your electric bill in half right? Because solar is cheaper. And FPL knows that. FPL knows solar is the cheapest form of energy there is in the country. That's why they're building 600 megawatts of solar. They're not going to charge you less. You're not going to pay less if you have solar power coming into your house from FPL, because they're not going to have to pay for natural gas, which they import from other states. So they know it's smart. So a municipality can do it themselves if they want, save money, and then have the redundant backup power there if the grid goes down. And now we realize how important that is. You can't live without clean water.
Yeah. Has there been a lot of interest, though, shown since this hurricane blew through with municipalities, counties that are looking into doing solar instead of generators?
Yes. There's a number of companies from out of state mostly talking to, you know, county governments all over Florida. And Irma sort of interrupted that conversation. But
or now, maybe put the accelerator on it.
Well, I think there's going to be a more serious consideration of using the sun to make sure you can pump your water.
Well, it is a sunshine state after all, unless there's a hurricane blowing through. Correct. Have you done a lot of, Dominic, have you done a lot of not private homeowner, like more commercial applications?
Yes, absolutely. We've done a couple of programs through the SANCAP solar program for Sanibel and Captiva. It was kind of a program where they put together a proposal and bidding process for any residential home and commercial building out there. So we did a lot of the commercial buildings, a couple of commercial buildings there, and some banks also. We've also done a moving and storage facility in Naples. And our entity, with the solar photovoltaic is our company called Urban Solar. And we've been over on the East Coast for years doing a lot of commercial applications and working with now municipalities, because it is becoming top of mind. And our goal is, as Neville had mentioned, there are some great financing programs and things that are coming out that are going to be accessible and amazing return on the investment. And our focus is, let's keep it local. Let's keep it with us in the state of Florida, not the big guys coming in from other states beating down the door, because we can be that competitive with this.
Yeah, when I said out-of-state companies, I meant they're going to partner. Most of them want to partner with local companies that are already on the ground doing great work. But these out-of-state companies have access to finance.
Right.
The money to finance. But then the people that are on the ground here have the local permitting to be able to go in and do the installs.
Right.
Correct. So the idea of getting power from sunlight's great, but we're also dealing with the aftermath of a hurricane. How would a roof covered in solar panels have fared in a storm like Hurricane Irma? Did you hear about any of them flying off because of the wind?
Absolutely. You know, what happens is we're very fortunate, you know, a very odd thing to say right now after Hurricane Irma, but we're very fortunate to hurricane and wind loading and building codes here in Florida. Structures have to be built to withstand these hurricane and wind loading. When we're attaching our solar systems to these commercial or residential facilities or homes, we have to meet those strict guidelines. We are not putting any additional stress or wind loading or things that the system and the building or home cannot withstand. So mm-hmm. because of that strict aspect of it and the inspectors from the municipalities and the jobs that they do, there is usually not a major issue. Right now, very comfortably sitting here, we had significantly less than our worst case scenario or best case scenario that we are expecting as a business owner and having solar photovoltaic systems or actually solar pool heating systems also. So it's Mother Nature.
You told me before we went on the show that you only heard of three individual panels that did not withstand it. But how many panels do you think you have out there that companies put out there?
Thousands. Probably
so three
tens of thousands.
Out of tens of thousands. Yeah, that's really not a bad batting average.
Really. It's not a bad batting average. And with photovoltaics, which is what we're specifically talking about, because you have – one of the things is most people get confused is solar thermal, which is your pool heating or your domestic hot water heating, and your solar photovoltaic systems, which is your electricity generation.
And those are the panels that we're all used to seeing.
That's correct, yes.
Right.
I would jump in here on Suncoast Credit. Union has a lot of branches all over Florida, 50, 60 branches, and they're putting solar on all of them, four or five of them in Collier County, and there's one at the end of our street. And I drove down there, and there's huge oak trees down, royal palms, everything's down, you know, just a huge mess. Telephone poles split in half because we're the last country in the world that still distributes power on wooden poles. Mm-hmm. Very strange. But anyway, I was very worried to see that the solar power system atop the Suncoast Credit building on 41. They were in perfect shape. They were all there. Not even a branch had touched them. They were fine.
Yeah, and it boils down to, like I said, there is the wind loading and the requirements from the permitting and engineering, but it is Mother Nature. I mean, anything over 90 miles an hour, even with something installed, whether solar or not, or pool cages and screens, stuff's going to happen, but we can only be as prepared and installed the proper way. And as you said, we did SandCap Community Bank, Bailey's is on Sanibel is one of the large applications that we did. No issues, no problems whatsoever. And then you hear of other commercial applications where there were catastrophic failures throughout the state of Florida or in Fort Myers or other areas. But it's depending on could have been a roof failure, age mm-hmm. of the roof, failure in an installation method or something like that. But if it's done the right way the first time, we just made it through Irma and we're very pleased with our success rate.
Well, there are a couple different ways that people make decisions. Sometimes people make emotional decisions because they don't want to be sweating for a week and a half after the next hurricane. But then people also want to make financial decisions that make sense for their pocketbook. And every time I do a story about solar energy, I keep hearing about how the prices keep going down. Way back when I first started thinking about it, I thought everything was cost prohibitive and there's just no way. So, Neville, you've been in the industry for quite a while. What have you seen happen to the pricing of solar installations? And then if you wouldn't mind following through on that with how that adds to the value of a given individual's home.
Well, good question. Oh, yeah, I've been doing this 25, 30 years, and I cannot believe how cheap solar has gotten. We never dreamed it would be down to 60 cents a watt, which is how solar panels are priced, and then you have to add on installation and the other components. But we're talking, about one-tenth the cost. Well, our company was doing very well in Washington in 2005 because people wanted solar and they'd pay anything for it. And there were no subsidies, there were no grants, there were no tax credits, and people were buying it. Our phones never stopped ringing. What we were charging, it cost us $3.50 a watt to buy a solar panel, and we had to pass that on. So it's like you can't afford not to go solar now, frankly. It's just so inexpensive, and the utilities are terrified of this because they're seeing – they want – that's why Florida Power and Light wants to own all the solar. Can't blame them. They're protecting their investors. In other states, the utilities have kind of given up, and they – there's nothing they can do about it. The solar is taken off and cutting into the business. So huge. Because it's so inexpensive. It's just luck that this manufacturing technology, largely from China, has developed and automated in such a way that it's phenomenally inexpensive. And to the value of a home, they do say a lot of realtor reports and studies I've read show that it does add, of course, value to the home. People will be very happy to know they're buying a house that's going to have this cheaper electric rate monthly. Florida does have low electric rates. We're lucky. That's probably one of the reasons we don't see solar as much. Now, for backup power and hurricanes, good idea. But, it's up north where you save so much money, where the electric rates are double what they are here. So, Florida Power and Light does keep our – and it's a clean utility, one of the cleanest utilities in the country. And they did a phenomenal job, I think, putting back 35 counties worth of grid. 90% of their customers were out. Amazing thing. What we have as a grid is incredible. But there are other options now, and we'd like to see it more opened up to the commercial, a free market in energy, so anybody can produce and sell power in the state. That's still not allowed.
Yeah. And I wanted to ask also about what if you create more power in your home than you're actually using? What happens to the extra?
Well, it goes into the grid, and in every state it's different, but for the most part you never make more than you can use. But it goes in the daytime and, of course, credits you back at night, right? So it's a credit situation. It flows back and forth. So most people don't overproduce. And there's a limit. And commercially, you can't make more than 2 megawatts and sell it. They don't have to buy more than that. It's different in every state. We have 550 utilities in the United States, and everyone has a different set of rules.
Exactly. And Dominic, I wanted to ask you in a really hardcore number kind of way. Say you have a house, 2,000 square feet, one level. What kind of cost is somebody looking at for an install for solar without the batteries? And then adding the batteries, you said, was $4,000 or $5,000 per?
$4,000 or $5,000 per. That's correct. And kind of off of what Neville had just said, When we're in a client's house or looking at a commercial facility, we are looking at that specific house usage consumption, their FP&L or LCEC usage. We size our systems based on that. So we'll never go above 105, 110% of what their existing consumption is because it's not beneficial and the power company's not paying for it. So when we size it and look at that, but an average 2,000 square foot house for $150 average electricity bill, you're looking at, you know, $18,000 to $25,000 for a complete turnkey system installed before the 30% federal tax credit that is available for homes. And it's a federal guideline that's available. And then from there, batteries, depending on if somebody wants to not skip a beat and have everything, they could be $30,000, $35,000 additional for batteries or $10,000, $12,000 on up from there, depending on what we're trying to power when the grid goes down.
So if we're looking at the 1,500 square foot house, one level, and they want to have the batteries and all that, you're looking at maybe $20,000 on the batteries and then the additional for the solar panels themselves.
That's correct.
And the installation.
Correct. And looking at it, and like I said, with the, you know, we don't kind of tout and try to sell on what their incentives are going to be or what the federal tax credit is, and that's how we sell it. We look at, here's your cost installed. We have some terrific financing options up to 15 years for with renewable banks and things like that. But the average return on investment for a consumer home here in Southwest Florida is 6 to 11 years. For that dollar amount invested after the 30% tax credit and things. And as Neville was speaking earlier, it's the time to do this. I haven't been in this business as long as he has, but, you know, FP&L had some incentives many years ago, and when that stopped and they couldn't get their $10,000 or $20,000 cash back from that, from those incentives, we're actually installing for less money than the best municipality and power company incentives the state of Florida has ever seen. So now really is the time to have, you know, be educated about solar, what it can do for you, and the proper installs and production.
And it almost becomes cliche every time I do anything about solar. Like, is the Sunshine State? Why is not everything on solar? And I wanted to ask, Neville, what do you think? Why is the state of Florida so far behind on solar power? And what's caused local governments, like, for example, Collier County or even Lee County? What has stopped them, and I don't know if you can get into the mind of all the county commissioners, but what would be one of the reasons why they would not have already gone forward with installing more solar applications?
There aren't the companies here that really specialize in doing that because they've been discouraged from coming to Florida. But there's local entrepreneurs like Dominic's company and Urban Grid that are doing really good work anyway. But because in Florida a third party can't sell solar, one of two states you can't do this in, there's no incentive here to capitalize big companies here and then come in and take – go to a county and say, look, we'll put the system in for free on all your government buildings, all your schools. I mean, you know, half of the schools in Maryland are – we've done, you know, just for free. It costs the school system nothing. And their bill goes cut in half, right? The third party makes money on that thanks to tax credits and the way they structure the business deal. That's not allowed in Florida. And that's why? Because as long as you keep electing Republican governors and Republican people – you know, we have a Republican Senate and House, we're never going to have it because they're in the pockets of the utility. The utility is looking out for its own interest. It doesn't want this huge competition. So that's really the reason. So you have small companies doing a good job, but you don't have the big companies that can really say, here's a third party that's going to finance it. It's going to cost you nothing. Just put it on and, you know, we'll make some money. You'll get a break in the power and everyone's happy.
Well, why does a third party have to be involved? Can there not just be one big company that does the job without being a
third party is financing because you in this state the power companies are monopolies, which they are in many places, but they are exclusive monopolies in their territory. They got these rights given to them in 1980, I believe, and it's unusual that no one else can compete with them in their exclusive territory. Now we have municipalities and we have like Lee County Electric Cooperatives, of course, but most of the Florida is Duke Power and, of course, FPL, and they have exclusive rights, and they lobby the government to say do not allow the third-party financing of electric power that is allowed in 48 other states, and
well,
they don't allow
it. I've looked at their lobbying efforts, and it kind of goes to all parties. They're equal opportunity lobbyists. I mean, they do lobby all the lawmakers on all sides of the aisle, but what I don't understand is why it's important that 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 third party has to be involved in making that happen. It's just because they have the financial backing.
It makes it much easier, and it's true. You have a good question there, because actually you can and you have plenty of customers, Dominic, and many companies do who just buy it themselves. And we're going to probably see counties and municipalities buying solar themselves with their own bonding capacity, right? They could borrow money cheap. They have the money in the bank, and they say, oh, we should be doing this and not look for the third party. So we're seeing this grow.
And then we're also starting to see cooperatives that are being formed to spread the cost of getting
yes.
solar power installed at homes. Have you heard anything about any of these?
Well, the League of Women Voters is Florida Sun is a huge program in the country, the state, and people can look into that. And then there is PACE, Property Assessed Clean Energy, which Collier County passed. I don't know if it's in Lee.
It's not in Lee.
And this is something you can get – you'll pay a little higher interest rate, but you can have a solar system installed by a company like Dominic's for free, and you will pay for it over 15 years on your tax bill every year. So it's financed through a third party.
The government being the third party in this instance.
Yeah, because they can bond – they sell the bonds for this. And Collier County said, sure, we'll be happy to do that. We'll just tack your cost of your solar system under your annual real estate tax.
They'll end up getting their money in yeah. one way or another.
Everybody
correct?
Gets a little piece of it, yeah. but you don't have to put up any money up front. You can get solar tomorrow.
And I think that's kind of something that's a bit of a hindrance, Dominic. Maybe you can speak to this, that some people see it as a huge expense that they may not be able to handle, like more expensive than getting a new roof put on. I mean, those are big expenses that you have for a home. But there's a lot of interesting financing options that you mentioned earlier that make it easier for people to not feel that huge bite at the outset.
Absolutely. And as Neville had said, the PACE program, we've been working with the PACE program with a little bit more progressive counties over on the East Coast for a couple of years now. Charlotte County has had it for just under a year that we've been working with the PACE program. Collier just picked up. Our assumption is Lee will probably follow suit with that. So, yes, you are paying a little bit more on interest on that aspect, but it's not going on your personal credit score. It's staying with the home and the property taxes on the house. So it's a great direction to go. We have cash purchase and cash buyers. We also have finance programs from, you know, smaller residential systems for 15 years to, you know, megawatt type of systems for municipalities. Everything in between as a, you know, I kind of call us a small mom and pop type of application. But we have the education and the tools available for anybody to move forward with it. And once they're aware of what their costs are, it sounds very expensive, but when you look at the big picture and the return on investment, and you're talking about a lot of products that have a 25-year manufacturer's warranty, increasing your home resale value and things like that, it is very attractive. And as you said, I can't say it enough, it is the Sunshine State.
And you mentioned a minute ago the PACE, that stays with the home's property taxes. If that's installed on the home and you sell your home, that stays with the home.
That is correct.
And then that tax assessment stays for the new homeowners.
That is correct, yes.
And in by Amendment 4 passing, which the legislature enacted a few months ago, that can't be taxed. And a commercial system can't be taxed, thank goodness. So that opened up the market a bit.
Right. And that's one of the big reasons for that is for your property tax assessment, as Neville said.
It can't be added to your property tax
exactly. So
valuation.
All of a sudden, you, you know, put a pool in your backyard at $35,000, $40,000, tax man cometh next year and your property taxes are increased with solar and renewable energy, even for solar pool heating. But you are not penalized is the wrong word, but it is a penalty because you're paying higher taxes on it.
Yeah, so nobody thinks that's a reward, higher taxes. All right. Well, we're going to have to leave it there for now because we've run out of time. But I do want to thank our guest, Dominic Zito with the Florida Solar Design Group. Thanks so much for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you for
having
us.
Great talking with you. And also solar advocate Neville Williams. Thanks for being here.
Julie, thank you.
It's great to have you in again. Thanks so much. Coming up, the number of children insured in Florida has hit a new low. We'll talk with one of the authors of a new study that calls the situation so dire and what health care reform means for kids in our state. I'm Julie Glenn, and this is Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.